So, if you remember from the last lecture, the last thing we did, well, almost the thing we did during the last lecture, was talking about the notion of thermality. Now, we discussed that we had a notion of thermality that comes from Gibbs. That is, okay, we call a thermostat that at a constant energy maximizes entropy. That's the definition of thermostat that we have from Gibbs. It's related to stationarity and passivity. Okay? We also discussed that, Gibbs states are not always well defined. And there are quantum systems, there are physical systems that we can stick thermometers to, like the electromagnetic field, for example, being that an example, that we cannot define Gibbs states for them. There's a problem with the partition function being ill-defined. There's a problem with the Gibbs states being ill-defined. So we looked at a different notion of thermality. And that notion of thermality came from the fact that it seems we proved that for all Gibbs states, when Gibbs states are well-defined, they all satisfy a condition that we call the KMS condition. That KMS condition says that if a two-point correlator, we did it actually with the same observable, but the proof didn't use. You remember the proof, where if I write A0 here or B0, doesn't matter, didn't use. So for a Gibbs state, any two-point correlator is stationary and also satisfies that the two-point correlator is complex antiperiodic. Okay? That we proved that all Gibbs states satisfied, and we argued that is an alternate definition of thermality. And it's a definition and something, it's a property that is well defined also in cases where Gibbs states are not well defined. And we discussed that all those states have also the properties, the physical properties that motivate the definition of Gibbs. They are passive. They are, when Gibbs states are defined, they're Gibbs states. They have everything that we would expect from a, what we call a thermostat, a phenomenological description of a thermostat, and are well defined everywhere. And like many people in algebraic quantum field theory, we're going to take actually this as a better definition of thermality than the Gibbs definition. All right? Everyone with me there? For us, thermality is satisfaction of the KMS condition. All right? Good. I'm so glad that no one has a problem with that, because, you know, giving up Gibbs is a hard one. Huh? That takes some convincing. It's true that Gibbs is not well-defined for the electromagnetic field without a cavity. So, yeah, there's something that needs to be improved, but again, this is more powerful, let's say. This is more powerful than Gibbs. All right. So, also, recall that we've been talking about particle detectors, and the reason they're relevant here is because we saw a proof of the Andrew effect, which is funny because we know the vacuum state of a quantum field, vacuum state are defined by an inertial observer in flat spacetime, it's indeed a thermal state. It's actually the absolute zero state, zero temperature, the vacuum. Okay? But we also saw that it seems that a non-inertial in particular, a constantly accelerated observer of the vacuum, seems that in their natural basis that comes out of solving their equations of motion, they would see a thermal state of a finite temperature that is proportional to the acceleration that they have. And that was funny. In the proof that I showed you of that, I used several things like the notion of particle counting as expectations of the number operator. We also, for that, we also needed an infinitely accelerating curve there. And it was a little bit, there were a couple of caveats with that derivation. So we want to discuss what actually happens if I carry a thermometer. Am I going to see a higher temperature if I accelerate? I want to make it for real. Like, okay, stop telling me about bases and expressing things in different bases and getting that. If I'm an experimentalist now. If I carry a thermometer and I accelerate, will I measure a temperature? Yeah, I don't care about your ends or anything. My thermometer, will it register a temperature? They have the mercury go up if I use mercury for it, which is like less common because it's toxic. But anyway, so this is what we're going to discuss today, okay? Or start discussing today. Hopefully finish, but if not, today and tomorrow. All right, so recall that we had a particle detector here. The particle detector we introduced in the simplest form is the Andrew DeWitt model, a two-level system that couples to the field through a monopole moment. Now, we discussed also, this is the Hamiltonian. if the particle detector is point-like, the Hamiltonian has this simple form, which is just, yeah, it's the monopole moment of the detector coupled to the pullback of the detector on the trajectory of the detector. So the detector is seeing the field at the points that the detector is at every time. And let me abbreviate this phi of t of tau and x of tau as just phi of tau, because otherwise the notation would be huge and difficult to maneuver with. Okay? All right. You know, if we use a two-level system as a detector, what would we expect if we want to expect thermality? If this is my thermometer, what would I expect? Well, I expect the two levels would get populated with a Boltzmann distribution. That's what I would expect. That's what we call, I mean, actually we call that the excitation-de-excitation ratio to be equal. So if a detector thermality expectation the detector state evolves to some state that is 1 over z exponential of minus beta h detector, which means that the probability of excitation as a function of the gap divided by the probability of the excitation function of the gap, that thing, would be equal to e to the minus beta omega. This is basically saying, yeah, my detector will get populated Boltzmannianly. It will be it will thermalize, that means it will reach a thermal state of a temperature given by this beta. Okay? Remember, there's two levels. The free Hamiltonian of the detector is just zero for level zero and ground and omega for excited. So this is an expectation. So will I see something like that? And if so, how will that come? Mm-hmm. All right. Also, it would be funny, right? Because we are used to thermal states being just that, thermal states, no? But we're arguing here that the vacuum somehow is thermal in two different ways, right? It's thermal of temperature zero with respect to time partial t, the time of inertial observers. But we also argue that it's thermal with temperature equals to a over 2 pi for observers that are constantly accelerated. That is funny. But remember, to define KMS states, we need several things. We need a state, we need a field, and we need a quantum observable, and we need a partial t, a partial tau. We need a time-like vector. Okay? Different people may define different KMS states, and in fact, the vacuum, I'm claiming that it's KMS for two different people with different temperatures at the same time. Any questions about these basics? Okay. That's important that you keep all that in mind, because that's the objective of all the calculations we're going to do here. And I don't want to lose anyone along the way. Now, I have here a couple of properties of the Wyman function that we're going to use. Wyman functions are great. They're not functions, as we discussed, they're distributions. They're great because they have a lot of information about the field. You can see here that the Wyman function, which is for a state rho, maybe I should label it rho, because usually I call W just for the vacuum, when rho is the vacuum. The Wyman function says that we can write as its imaginary part, I its imaginary part. The imaginary part of the Wyman function is just the expectation of the commutator. For a field that's canonically quantized, this thing, the commutator at different times, is the Z number. It's a multiple of the identity. Everyone happy with that, hopefully. Right? This thing is a multiple of the identity. So an expectation over rho of a multiple of the identity doesn't depend on rho. So the commutator of the field is state independent. This part, the imaginary part, is state independent and is the commutator of the field for the Wyman function. Now, the real part depends on the state and is the expectation value of the anti-commutator. Okay? Also, the conjugate of the Wyman function is just swap the two variables of the Wyman function. Everyone happy with these two properties? All right. Yep.
How do you do the switching in the complex conjugate there?
Here. Oh. This is the missing step, if you want, is conjugate of the trace of rho phi t prime, phi tau prime conjugate, right? That's the definition of the Wyman. And then taking the conjugate of this is swapping the order of the operators. Okay? The conjugate of the trace is the trace of the adjoint. Also not swapping, it's taking the adjoint, but all the operators in here are self-adjoint. Okay? Hermitian. And in a field, we can discuss if it's self-adjoint, and in what sense. Okay. Questions about that? All right, so let's begin with computing a transition probability for a stationary state. Let's say that I have, well, remember, we did a calculation of the transition probability for a detector coupled to the field. Remember that? And we obtained it as a function of the Wyman function. Remember, eventually I expanded the Wyman and I wrote everything in terms of Fourier transforms, right? But there was an intermediate step, if you remember, with for a point light detector. The probability I can write, transition probability, I can write as lambda square sigma, and let me define an f of omega sigma that I defined this f as 1 over sigma d tau over the whole real line, d tau prime over the whole real line, and I'll tell you in a minute why I'm writing this like this. Say the switching, then e to the I omega tau minus tau prime, Wyman tau tau prime. This expression we obtained in one of the first lectures about detectors. The only difference is that I wrote this as this. Why did I do that? I mean, I'm free to do it. That what I'm saying here is this. I wrote it in terms of a dimensionless variable, if you want. This is convenient because imagine that I have, assume, a switching function that has L2 norm 1, strongly supported. Okay, what does that mean, right? So if it's got a norm 1, it means that this function cannot be anything, right? It cannot be a constant, because if it were a constant, the L2 norm would be infinity. Agreed? L2 norm is just the integral of the modulus square over the whole real line. So if it's 1, it means that this switching function is only non-zero, or at least it's not homogeneous. It's kind of somehow strongly supported in a region around 1 of the variable tau over sigma. Okay? Strongly supported in a timescale sigma. You can imagine a Gaussian, for example. You have a Gaussian switching, that's precisely it. The function is almost zero far away from tau over sigma equals zero, and then it grows, right, near zero, and then all the support is concentrated there. Okay, so when the value of this dimensionless parameter tau over sigma is 1, is where the support of the switching lives. Any questions about that? We need to be clear on this. You're saying the detector is on for a finite time, and I call that finite time sigma. Okay, and then on in a weak kind of sense. On as in like maybe it could be a Gaussian. And that means it's got tails, right? They're almost zero. And then it's non-zero only for values of this dimensionless parameter close to zero, between minus 1 and 1. All right? Please ask if you don't see it clear. I want everyone to understand what that means. All right. All right. So that's where we get this expression. We really got literally this expression when we computed. Everyone remember, some of you remember that we got that when we computed transition probabilities. If not, check it, because we did get it. It's literally what we got. Okay. Now we're gonna play a little bit with this. Yeah, true, nice. Why did you define this F in here? You see, I mean, this sigma cancels this sigma, and is lambda squared the integral over the switchings of the kind of Fourier factor Wideman function. We obtained that. This F has a name in the literature about unruly weak detectors, and it's called the response function of the detector. It does, I mean, if you read books, like Takagi, for example, the paper that I recommended last week, that this switching function, sorry, this function here is called response function. Okay, yes, if you see it on the literature. And it's convenient, yes?
I think there should be a minus I, but...
No, because it was tau prime minus tau, I think. All right? It doesn't really matter in any case. Functions are real, so. But that's correct. All right, so. What we're going to do, we're going to play a little bit with this expression. And we're going to introduce, because I'm interested in knowing what the detector will do when it's interacting with the field for a long, long time. Okay? So if the detector, I want to talk about thermalization. And thermalization means that I want to be on for a long time. I want to see what happens if I'm on for a long time. So let's play a little bit with this expression, with that objective in mind. So this thing kind of, I wish I could write this in terms of Fourier transforms. Why? Because it becomes super easy to do that. Can I do it? Yeah, well, not directly, because I'm mixing tau prime, the Fourier factor, and the Wideman function. But what I can do, though, is write these things as inverse Fourier transforms and plug them in. A typical trick when you want to write everything in Fourier. So let me do that. Let me write tau over sigma as the inverse Fourier transform. Of some function chi tilde. All right. And I'm going to do the same with, so I can do it like this, or because the function is real, the switching function is a real function, I can write it as follows. All right, so basically, I can write it as that, or I can write it as its conjugate, because it's real, it's the same. Everyone happy with that? Okay. Let's plug that in into F. So, F omega sigma, it's equal to 1 over 4 pi square sigma. The reason I have 2 pi factors here is because I'm lazy. And by that I mean I want to define Fourier transforms, so the tildes are defined as integrals without any factors in front. That means the inverse has a factor of 1 over 2 pi. Okay? Minus infinity to infinity d omega, so well, d tau first. Minus infinity to infinity d tau prime. Minus infinity to infinity d omega. Minus infinity to infinity d omega prime. And then I get star omega, omega prime, e to the I, omega tau over sigma, minus omega prime tau prime over sigma. And then Wideman tau prime, e to the I, tau minus tau prime, omega. All right? So far, you just plugged in a Fourier transform. Did nothing else. All right, so if I'm going to talk about equilibration, I better talk about a stationary state of the field, no? Know what I mean by that? If you want to equilibrate with something, you better have that something not changing in time, no? So it makes sense to talk about equilibration when the state of the field is stationary. Remember what that stationary means? Stationary means translationally invariant in time. Okay, it will not change in time. And that means if the field is stationary with respect to time tau, then the Wyman function just depends on delta tau. Or let me just write it. Tau minus tau prime. Okay? Everyone happy with that? I can translate in time both fields. Where is it? Where's the Wyman defined? Here. I can translate in time both field until this is zero, and this is tau minus tau prime, because translational invariance. Okay? All right. So with that, taking that into account, there's a change of variables here that seems particularly easy to the coupled integrals. Which one would that be? I mean, it's the one that you keep doing all the time. I have a difference of times. Here I have a difference of times. I have a difference of times. So maybe I can separate it in sum and difference of times, huh? These two variables. So I can do the change of variables. Change of variables, u is equal tau minus tau prime, v is equal tau plus tau prime, okay? If we do that change of variables, seems that things are gonna get easier. I mean, can you see already? We're gonna get a delta of omegas, which is great, and we're gonna get a Fourier transforms in u, which is even greater. But if you don't see it, we'll see it, don't worry. All right, the Jacobian of that transformation is 1 over 2. Right, because tau is u plus v divided by 2. And tau prime is u minus v divided by 2. Tau prime is v plus u divided. Tau prime is, v minus u divided by 2. So the Jacobian of that transformation is 1 over 2. All right, so f it's equal to 1 over 8 pi square sigma, let's just put in the Jacobian in there, minus infinity to infinity du, minus infinity, infinity dv, d omega, I'm gonna do all the steps, why not? D omega prime, and then we have here the conjugate of the Fourier transform of the switching, the Fourier transform of the switching with a prime. And then I get e to the I over 2 sigma omega plus omega prime u e to the I over 2 sigma omega minus omega prime v. The Wyman function of u, because stationary, only depends on u, okay? And finally, e to the I omega u. Well, this is fantastic. Why? Because the integral over v, the only thing that it gives, I'm gonna write it here, the integral over v, so if you integrate this integral minus infinity to infinity dv e to the I 2 sigma omega minus omega prime v, which is all the integral in v, there's a delta. So this thing is 2 pi delta of 1 over 2 sigma omega minus omega prime, which is the same as 4 pi sigma delta omega minus omega prime. All right? Well, if we plug that in here, That's nice. The integral in V gets done and gives me the delta. One of the integrals in omega, I can use the delta to do, and I'm left with omega sigma is equal to 1 over 2 pi. 4 pi sigma are canceled by the prefactor of the delta. And I have minus infinity to infinity du minus infinity to infinity d omega. Now, the modulus square, I mean, it's real anyways, but the modulus square of the Fourier transform, the Fourier transform doesn't have to be real. Sorry. The modulus square of the Fourier transform of the switching. And and then W, and then E to the I, omega plus omega over sigma. That's right, U. Oh, but that's still pretty easy, no? Because the integral over U now, it's a clear Fourier transform, isn't it? No? It changes U to omega plus omega over sigma. Agreed? And I get the Fourier transform of the Wideman. So I get, do I have the 2 pi there? Yes, I do, which is nice. 1 over 2 pi minus infinity to infinity d omega, and I have the modulus square of the switching Fourier transform and the Fourier transform of W evaluated at omega plus omega over sigma. Okay, that's the response function. Now, oh, yes. That's okay, that's neat. Maybe not super exciting, I don't know. I think it's exciting because it simplifies a lot. But then again, my standards for exciting are different when it comes to this problem. So different than the rest of the world, I think. That doesn't work on that. But we can simplify a lot more. Look, we are interested in the thermalization limits of this, no? Meaning like, I want equilibration. I want to wait a long time. Waiting a long time is taking the limit of sigma going to infinity. Agreed? Yes or no? Remember, I mean, I'm just checking that you remember that sigma was the time scale where the switching function is non-zero, okay? Or it's strongly supported at. Okay? So we want the limit of large sigma. Can I be a physicist and just cross this out in the limit? Can I or can I not, in principle? What do you think? Would it be okay? So if I were to tell you, but I'm interested in the limit, I just cannot just cancel that. What would you say? Would you complain? I hope some of you might. No? I mean, this is an integral over all omega. No matter how strong, how big sigma is, there's an omega big enough that omega over sigma will not be small as compared to big omega, no? Ah, but look what the weight is here. The weight of this function is the Fourier transform of the switching. Now, if the k is fast enough, I wish I could do italics, but I can't. So maybe just underline or something. Fast enough, remember that if this thing is strongly supported on a scale sigma, then the Fourier transform of it is strongly supported on a scale 1 over sigma. It's the Fourier transform, isn't it? So, if this thing decays fast enough, well, if you have a Gaussian as a switching, the Fourier transform is another Gaussian. So the large values of omega are suppressed extremely fast. All right? So when sigma goes to infinity, this thing has a very tiny support. Okay? And then you can do this approximation, no problem. Okay? For that, you need to demand that your switching is, the Fourier transform of your switching is not ridiculous. There are problems, for example, if you are, imagine that you're a very nervous person and you tend to switch your interactions very fast. I'm like, I can't wait. You wait a long time, but you are like super fast switching. Then you have a problem because that means that the switching function would be something like a top hat function. The Fourier transform of that is a sinc function. The sinc function decays very, very slowly. The sinc function decays like 1 over omega. The Fourier transform of the top hat is a sinc that decays very slow. So doing that approximation would be maybe not so justified. Now, if you are a very, very calm person and then you like your switchings slow and nice, then it's fine. But you can have like a Gaussian switching or an exponential, even a Lorentzian. A Lorentzian is even better than an exponential. A Lorentzian switching, and then the Fourier transform is an exponential. So that's related to not switching nervously. Which is the same as saying adiabaticity. All right, there's an extra assumption. If you want to thermalize, be adiabatic. But you already knew that, no? This is the mathematical consequence of it. If you switch the interactions too fast, no matter how long you wait, there are papers that talk about it, no matter how long you wait, you may not thermalize. Okay? So you better switch adiabatically. You better switch smoothly enough. Okay? Now, under that assumption, then the Fourier transform will decay fast enough for me to do this approximation. Limit sigma going to infinity. Interaction switched on forever. Of f omega sigma, it's equal to 1 over 2 pi integral minus infinity to infinity d omega Fourier transform squared w omega. Okay? Everyone happy with what I just did? Limit, and I have to write adiabatic here. And I mean as a math thing. And as a math thing, I mean if the Fourier transform of the switching decays fast enough. So if you're switching in the adiabatic limit, okay? You need a smooth switching, not a sharp switching. In that limit, I can approximate, or I cannot. In that limit, it's exact. I can write that integral over there as this one. And look at that, I just decoupled the two. So this is just the Fourier transform of the Weidman divided by 2 pi. And then the L2 norm of the Fourier transform of the switching. Ah, but the Fourier transform of the switching. So the switching, what was the L2 norm of the switching? Do you remember?
1.
What is the L2 norm of the Fourier transform? Are they related? They are. Okay, if you don't know it off the top of your head, then let's just compute it. Just for fun. So we know this. D tau over sigma. Okay? We know that. Agreed? Okay. Well, that means that, let's see what that means, okay? And let's do another calculation. I1 minus infinity to infinity, d omega of tilde omega square. But then I can introduce this as a Fourier transform. So as a Fourier transform, I know that this is equal to minus d tau minus d tau prime, okay? And then minus infinity, infinity d omega of tau over sigma prime, okay, with a conjugate, of course, that is real, so it doesn't really matter here, but I write it just nevertheless. All right, all that I did here is, oh, I know that xi tilde is the Fourier transform of xi. Oh, sorry, chi. Chi tilde is the Fourier transform of chi, so I just write it explicitly as a Fourier transform. Okay, one and its conjugate. That's the modulus square. All right, cool. But this is just, this is this thing, one of the integrals over t that I have here, I can write as, sorry, let me just do the integral over, the integral over omega is very easy because I decoupled them. What's the integral over omega? A 2 pi delta, no? So this thing is equal to 2 pi integral of dt eta prime xi tau sigma psi tau prime sigma with that star. I don't care about the star. It's a real function, okay? Delta tau minus tau prime. All right, nice. So this thing has become 2 pi over the integral minus infinity to infinity d tau modulus of tau over sigma squared. That's nice because I know that's 1 and this is 2 pi. Okay? Yeah, then the 2 norm of a Fourier transform is related with the 2 norm of the function by a 2 pi if the 2 norm is defined, the L2 norm. Okay? All right then. Well, it couldn't be better, no? Look at that. A detector that interacts with a stationary state of the field for a long, long time, the probability of excitation of that detector is proportional to the Fourier transform of the Weidman function. Everyone with me? Questions about this? All right. But it's kind of nice, huh? A detector kind of acquires information about the Weidman function after interacting for a long time. What time is it? Oh my. All right. So now, that was for a stationary state of the field, not for a thermal state, right? I mean, there are more things that are stationary that are not thermal. What happens if the state is also thermal? So if the field is KMS with respect to partial tau, then we know what? We know then that the Weidman tau tau prime is, this blackboard sometimes plays tricks on me, as in like, I'm really trying to make it. Okay. We know that it's stationary, first. And we also know that it's anti-periodic with temperature equals 1 over beta, okay? Right? That's the KMS condition that we talked about, no? So if the state is KMS, or if U1 is thermal, so if the state is KMS with respect to partial tau with temperature equals 1 over beta, then the Weidman function, which is a two-point correlator, as those that we have there, satisfies the KMS condition, the complex periodicity condition. KMS condition is stationarity together with complex periodicity. Can you have this without that? Yes. Would you be KMS then? No. Okay? You can have complex periodicity and not be KMS because you're not stationary. So be careful with those things. You need to be stationary, and once you're stationary, satisfy complex periodicity, then you're KMS. All right. So let's take Fourier transforms. Then minus infinity to infinity d. Let me take the variable delta tau of this thing. (Clears all right, d delta tau. Okay, what did I do? This is the Fourier transform, Ft of KMS. Now look at that, so many letters. That was the Fourier transform of the KMS condition. Agreed? I just took this and took a Fourier transform on both sides. Everyone happy? All right. Now, the right-hand side is easy. The left-hand side, maybe not. Okay, let's see. So what we can do here, what's going to be, what's this? Who can tell me right away? As a function of the Fourier transform of W. So what I can do for this side is a change of variables, right? If I do a change of variables and I put the minus here, and then I get a minus here, but also the limit swap, so I reabsorb the minus and put in the limit back where they were. So this thing here is just the Fourier transform of the Weinmann at minus omega. Everyone sees that? It's just I don't want to do this one. This one is more interesting. But do you see it? Does anyone not see it? Okay. Again, change of variables, delta tau to minus delta tau prime. Then you have a sign here, changing the value of, that's why you get a minus omega. But then you also get a minus from the differential and swapping the limits. The swapping and the minus together go back to the limits where they were. Voila. Fourier transform evaluated minus omega. Now, the left-hand side, I can also do a change of variables for the left-hand side and write this. Gamma. I'm just trying to be careful and not to like sell you anything that I cannot justify. Omega, delta tau prime. So the change of variables that I'm doing here is delta tau prime. It's equal to delta tau plus I beta, of course. That's the natural one, right? To deal with that. Now, looks a lot like this. E beta omega. E to the I omega delta tau prime. And then I can write, and then you tell me if you agree. Beta omega. Have I cheated? I mean, I know I have not, but does it look like I've cheated? And why have I not? So you see that I stopped writing minus infinity to infinity there. Why? Because my change of variables is not innocent. It's displacing in the complex plane, right? So this gamma here. So if this is the integral I'm doing, I was doing an integral on the real line, but I did a change of variables, and I'm doing an integral here now, where this thing is I beta. If you want, or beta, because this is the imaginary plane. I'm doing the integral there. Is that a Fourier transform? Under some properties of the Weinmann, yes. So if Cauchy integral theorem works, then look at this. The integral of this together with the integral here, and the integral here, they add up to zero. So if they add up to zero, that integral over here, this cancels this. So that integral over here, let me just do it like this. It's going to be equal to minus the integral over here. Now, and then you can express this integral over the real line over a complex integral. Now, to be able to do something like that, what do you need? So you remember your complex calculus? What property do I need on W in order for me to be able to do that? Cauchy's integral theorems in general, when do they work? Do you need to demand something from the function? Yeah? Analytical. Well, we call it holomorphic when it's complex, yes. Analytical, no, that's fine. W has to be analytical, analytic. I mean, the name is holomorphic when we do complex analysis. Is W an holomorphic? Well, I just told you it's a distribution. So in general, it's not. But there are ways to make it. This is, that requires, to be able to do this, you require some regularization. I'm just telling you, even though I'm not going to use it much, I will use it at some point, but you can write your Wyman functions of the field that are distributions, you can write them as a regularized version. And we will see one when we compute the one for accelerated observers, right? But we assume that we are able to write this as a regularized version omega sub epsilon that introduces an epsilon. You've done this when you've done Feynman diagrams and things like that all the time. You introduce an epsilon in the denominator that is complex. That thing removes the poles from the real line, okay? And that epsilon that you have makes the function, can make the Wyman function be holomorphic when you in the outside of regions that they have poles, okay? With that regularization, you can do this integral as a Fourier transform, and then the limit and the integral commutes, okay? The limit taking the regularizer to zero. That is non-trivial, that's tricky, and I'm not doing it, but I don't want to just lie to you and tell you that that's a Fourier transform right away. Okay, so it requires that your Wyman function can be regularized and that you do it. Okay, write it as a limit of something that is holomorphic. All right, okay, cool. Questions? All right, so now let me just summarize what we got here. So we got that the translation of the KMS condition, Fourier translation or transform of the KMS condition gives me that e to the beta omega minus omega. That's the KMS condition. Actually, this has a name, the Fourier transform. It depends who you ask. What people call detailed balance depends on who you ask. Most people will tell you that detailed balance is this. It's the EDR, so the excitation, the excitation ratio being equal to that. Okay? Fine, that's what the literature will tell you most. Some people, people that don't work on field theory, but work on things more general than that, statistical field theory and things like that, algebraic field theory, they would call this detailed balance. Anyway, it's a matter of names, and people use different names, and by now you have been doing physics and math for a while, you know that happens, no? People call different things with the same name. That is sad, but happens, all right? Anyway, so let's just call it the Fourier transform, translation, of the KMS condition. All right, now remember, I'm gonna erase this. Now remember that the commutator, let me call it C with funny letters, of tau prime, which I define as the expectation value of the commutator of the field, that thing, it's equal to twice I, the imaginary part of the Wyman. Okay? That we already saw. It's in the board, on the board here, up here. All right, that means that if the Wyman is stationary, that implies the commutator is also stationary. Real part, imaginary part, don't talk to each other. It has to be. Okay. All right. We can Fourier transform the commutator as well. The Fourier transform of the commutator at omega, it's equal to the Fourier, but by definition, the Fourier transform is this, delta tau C delta tau e to the I omega delta tau. And then this is equal to delta tau, and we have W delta T, delta tau, sorry, minus the conjugate of W, but that's twice I the imaginary part of omega, minus the conjugate delta tau, E to the I omega delta tau. All right, so this is equal to the Fourier transform of the Wellman function evaluated at omega, and the Fourier transform of the conjugate evaluated at omega. Oh, by the way, remember what the conjugate of the Wellman is? What is it? Who can see it from up there? Somewhere. That's right. So this is actually equal to W of minus delta tau. Conjugate is there, huh? The conjugate just swaps the argument. So if it's T minus T prime, we get T prime minus T, so minus delta tau. Okay? Minus W of minus omega. All right, so the Fourier transform of the commutator, it's equal to the Fourier transform of the Wellman minus the Fourier transform of the Wellman evaluator at minus omega. Cool. Look who has two different equations for the Wellman. Yeah. One, two. This is KMS. Okay? This is just equal stationarity, okay? It's the commutator requiring stationarity. So we know that the commutator is the difference between W of omega minus W minus omega, and we also know that E to the beta omega Fourier transform of W is equal to Fourier transform of W of minus omega. Nice. I can substitute minus omega in here, right? And then find a form for W of omega, for the Fourier transform of the Wellman. Ha! So if you are KMS, it seems that the Wellman function is going to be fully determined by its commutator, by this imaginary part. That doesn't mean it's just imaginary. It means that both the real and imaginary part will be fully determined by the value of the commutator. Okay? Let's find it. So we get that substituting one, two in one, we get the following. The commutator Fourier transform is equal to the Fourier transform of the Wellman minus E to the beta omega W omega, which means, and then look at this. This is just, let me, if you don't mind, let me introduce the dependence on beta as a functional dependence. I haven't done it because, you know, notations are tedious and long, but obviously this depends on beta, okay? So let me introduce the dependence on beta just for fun. So this thing depends on omega and beta. Do you have it in that order? Yes. The Wellman, the Fourier transform of the Wellman function for a KMS state, it's equal to minus the commutator, the Fourier transform of the commutator, omega beta, and then some function P of omega beta that I know 100%. What is this P? Where P is whatever's missing. So it's 1 over E beta omega minus 1. Also known as a Planckian factor. Nice. So the Fourier transform of the Wellman of a field state satisfying KMS with respect to partial tau with KMS temperature 1 over beta, it's equal to minus the Fourier transform of its commutator times a Planckian. So, interesting thing we learned. The Wellman is fully determined by the commutator, to begin with. Okay? Again, that doesn't mean that it's just the commutator. That's the Fourier transform. You have to invert, and you're going to have a real and imaginary part. Okay? But the commutator dictates both. Not only that, kind of the classical notions of thermality start to show up because we got a Planckian there. I guess this is just kind of cute. because it doesn't mean much. But we got a Planckian there, indeed. And now let's put together this result with the result about detectors here. Nice. Let's call it N1. And let's call this one N2. N for nice, because they're nice results, both of them. So let me use the final board for this. On the one hand, we know that the response of a detector in the long time limit, when it's on for a long time, as long as you switched carefully, okay? A detector carefully switched on forever will respond like the Fourier transform of the Wyman. Okay? Now, we also know that the Wyman function for a KMS state is actually equal to this. Well, in fact, we can just use the KMS condition for what I'm going to tell you. Not even nice too, but whatever. Putting together N1 and the KMS condition, 1, okay, imply that the probability, so let me define this R that I define here of omega sigma, I define it as the excitation, de-excitation ratio, okay? How likely it is that my detector gets excited versus how likely it is that my detector gets de-excited. Or like comparing the populations of the excited state with the ground state, okay? So I get the probability of excitation, omega sigma, and I get the probability of de-excitation, omega sigma. Ah, but I know they're related. Remember the first day of detectors? One is the same as the other, swapping omega by minus omega. Remember, that swaps excited and ground. So this is equal to P excitation, omega sigma, over P excitation, minus omega sigma. Right, but I know what it is because, you know, I wrote, it's up there. You may not see it. Up there, P omega is lambda sigma F. Okay, lambda sigma cancels this ratio because it's the same. So this is going to be equal to F of omega sigma. F of minus omega sigma. Nice, and then I can take the limit when the switching is on forever. And let me write adiabatic. It's kind of interesting because that's usually used as a physicist term, but I mean there's a mathematical term here. That means the Fourier transform of the switching decays fast enough. Okay? And it's related to the physical assumption that your switching is not ridiculously violent. If you take the limit, then we obtain that F in that limit. Where is nice one? Where is nice here? F in that adiabatic limit is just the Wyman Fourier transform. So look at this. The limit of F omega sigma F minus omega sigma is actually equal to the Fourier transform of omega over Fourier transform minus omega. And I know because of one how they're related by a factor e to the beta omega. You see one there? Oh, nice. E to the minus beta omega, using one here. Look at that. Let's revise the it's the reflection. Do you see what it says on that board? The first one, the bottom? Do you see it, people? I don't. Okay, it says, or should say, thermality expectation or something. We expect the ratio of occupation versus the of ground of unexcited, so the ratio between the excitation probability and the excitation probability to be proportional to minus beta omega. That's my thermometer. My thermometer gets populated thermally. Okay? And look at that. What we got here is exactly that. A detector that interacts with a KMS state for a long time, as long as you switch carefully, let me just write that phrase. A detector that interacts with a KMS state with respect to its proper time. That's super important. You need to define a time. Proper time of temperature T KMS equals 1 over beta. As long as it's switched on carefully. And the thing is that we don't need to wave our hands. We know what carefully means, huh? That's the nice bit about this, I feel. I mean, for someone like me anyways. Carefully, and asterisk. Asterisk. We know what that means. Huh? Thermalizes. Catches Boltzmannian statistics, population. A detector interacts with a KMS state. Whatever, as long as it is switching, it's switched on carefully after interacting with the field for a long time. Okay, so this is the result we got. Look at that. A detector, a two-level system, a particle detector, interacting with a KMS state of the field for the detector. The response of such detector went on forever. It's exactly that the detector will acquire the same temperature as the KMS temperature of the field. How is that? I mean, to me, that's exciting. I know we did a lot of boring steps, but those boring steps, the good thing about those boring steps is that no one has waved their hands here. You have all the steps, and you know what everything means. No, it's adiabatic. No, yeah, it's adiabatic, and I know what that means. It means that I want this Fourier transform of chi to decay fast enough. Okay? Fast enough means so that I'm able to take this limit, the limit I took, where I don't even remember where it is. This limit, okay? Go from here to here. Okay? That means I want my switching function to be relatively smooth. Maybe not necessarily too much, but relatively smooth. I don't want it to be adiabatic. I know exactly what examples won't work. And if you ask a pure mathematician, they will tell you exactly which ones work. I know some, it's enough to know some that work, I guess. And I know many that work. So, things that we proved. KMS implies thermalization. Isn't that not thermal? By all means, this is thermal, because that's the experimentalist definition of thermal. I stick a thermometer, the thermometer thermalizes with it and tells me the temperature. KMS is definitely thermal, and I'm defending here KMS is thermality, 100%. TKMS, I might as well write T, because phenomenologically, I get the laws of thermodynamics that define thermalization, the zero law. Any questions? None? I hope that that's clear, then, and not that you got lost or anything. Yeah?
When, is there ever a situation where the field's not stationary?
Yeah, all the time. But we want to do the field in a thermal state. We want to see what happens when the field is in a thermal state. And a thermal state is stationary. Remember, we define thermality through KMS. And KMS is two things. Stationarity. I mean, without stationarity, there's no thermality. It's a necessary condition. And KMS, that's thermality. I'm focusing on stationary states. Now, the one thing that I haven't done today and I'll do tomorrow is, right, so if I prepare the state in a thermal state, the field in a thermal state, then a detector will thermalize with it. An inertial detector, if I prepare a state, if I just heat it up with, I don't know whatever, laser, I don't know, wood, whatever you want. If you heat up the field, then a detector will thermalize with it. An inertial detector will. I haven't proved to you that an accelerated detector, so to begin with, is the field, is the vacuum state of the field, KMS, for partial tau corresponding to the proper time of an accelerated observer. I haven't showed that to you, have I? No. If we prove that, though, then we have everything. Because if we prove that, that the vacuum state of the field is KMS with respect to the proper time of an accelerated detector, I know that someone carrying a thermometer that is constantly accelerated will register that temperature of the field after a long time if you switch on carefully. This is what I'm going to give you the next lecture. And this is what proves the Andrew effect. You see, the Andrew effect is no longer the result of a mathematical derivation on fields. Is a result of a mathematical derivation on thermometers. See what I mean? This was the proof, or this is not the way Andrew did it, but very similar. This is about time has passed, right? So, as usual, we don't do relativity as Einstein did it anymore. Einstein believed in masses changing as you move and so on. Anyway, so the point being that with this derivation, no one can argue the Andrew effect is unphysical. The Andrew effect is as physical as QFT. And if we do experiments and find the Andrew effect doesn't exist, then maybe we need to go back to revise QFT, because there's nothing funny. I didn't add anything. It's already into QFT. Okay? Wow. Okay, cool. We have 4 minutes only. I mean, we had minus 11 minutes. So I guess I'll see you tomorrow, and we will finish this proof.